right, we're back on the Real Kipper at Noon show. In 2012, when the Washington Capitals made their first rounder, man, we haven't been short of any Tom Wilson storylines, including a Stanley Cup. But most recently, 600 games in the National Hockey League. Only a handful of guys in franchise history in Washington have done it quicker than Tom Wilson, including the likes of Stevens, Ovi, Kevin Hatcher, Mike Gartner. So let's bring him on board. Tom Wilson, thanks for joining us. How are you? You know, last night you guys took a little bit of a whooping from the Boston Bruins. I was worried about morale and maybe, you know, Tom Wilson, maybe get him on a better day. But morale's got to be pretty decent still today because you're on our show right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know how it is. There's ups and downs, and last night wasn't pretty. A little bit of film this morning, and then kind of throw it out. And you know, every day in the NHL is a good day. So we'll move on and keep it going.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. You know, when I see a lot of the Capitals Tom Wilson related storylines, I wonder how much of your mental energy before a game goes into thinking about individual players on the other team, because it sure seems like they spend a lot of time thinking about you.
Yeah, I think you kind of learn. I've learned over the years to try and tune it out a little bit. Sometimes it's harder than others, but I just try to focus on what's going on in our room. We got so many great guys. They always have my back, and there can be a lot of distractions, especially nowadays, social media and all that. But I just try and worry about my game, and I guess at this point, you know, making it so other teams don't like playing against me, and that's kind of become the theme. And you know, that's all right. We'll play hard hockey and hopefully keep kind of collecting the wins and having success here in Washington.
You might have touched something on teams that might not want to play against you. And I got to go back to the whole thing with the New York Rangers and, you know, a talented group, but they seem to be missing something. And it was almost as if this Tom Wilson episode or incident kind of changed that whole organization to the point where you look over, you see Ryan Reeves, they're talking about team toughness. The next thing you know, they're at times a number one in points this season. You single-handedly turned around that organization. Ranger fans should be loving you, Willie.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes in waves. I think you see a lot of teams around the league, you know, they get skilled and then the, you know, a big, heavy team has success in the playoffs, and then the next year, you know, every team goes out and gets big and heavy again, and then the game trends small and skilled, and it's just kind of a circle, and it's been that way for a while. But obviously the Rangers wanted to address it, and they brought in a new coach, and he's obviously had a lot of success, and they're playing good hockey. So they've always had talented players in that room, but, you know, they're playing well this year, and obviously, that's a rivalry, and you know, a lot of guys over there. I'm a big fan of Artie Panarin. He's a character. He's a lot of fun to watch play, and you know, their team's playing well. So we'll try and, like I said, we'll worry about our team, and you know, see where it comes crunch time down the end of the season and playoffs.
When you talk about that, like, hard hockey, you know, you'll stick to, how much of that is something that you consciously have to bring versus it just coming natural to the way you play?
I think the physicality and stuff is always going to be natural to me. That's kind of what I've had my whole life. I've always taken pride in playing the game hard and playing every shift hard. Grew up watching the Rock'em Sock'em movies with my brothers and watching guys like Wendell Clark and those guys in Toronto. So that's always been there for me. Obviously over the years I've tried to continue to improve offensively and round out my game, and I don't think too much about it. Obviously you know, guys that have played Kipper knows, like, you're out there, you got to be able to kind of flip the switch on and off, and when you need to do it, when you need to, you know, depending on how the game's going, you need a goal or you need a fight, you just kind of take it as it goes, and there's really no easy way to say the, you know, how it happens, but you just kind of got to flip the switch and you know when to do it. And I've tried to add that to my game over the years. I mean, Barry Trotz a couple of years ago you know, would talk to me about, you know, when and how and when it's needed, and that's also important.
God, that switch, because the switch went from what was looking like maybe a third or fourth line type of role where you go out there, you hit, you fight, you create energy to a legitimate top six player. And when I speak of just like the evolution of your career here, I mean, when did you really see it that not only could you play on a top six scenario, but on some nights, man, you could be even better than an Ovechkin?
I don't know about going that far, but it's been a fun ride, and played with some really good players, and that always helps, because as you play with those guys, you demand more of yourself, and you learn, and guys like Nicky Backstrom and Kuzi and Ovi, and when you're playing with those guys, they just demand the best, and you push yourself to make good plays, and you push yourself to improve, and not let them down as a line mate, as a teammate. And I think just worrying about, my game and then being able to add a little bit of offensive capability to play with those guys made for a good recipe over the years. And it's still coming. You're still always trying to adapt and improve. And there's a lot of young guys now, and just trying to help those guys. I really focus on whatever I could do to help the team win, and whether it was helping those guys out on the ice get a little more room, or, whether it was a fight to change momentum early on in my career. My mentality has kind of always just been like, what can you bring to the table to help the team win tonight? And it's changed a little bit over the years, but still kind of the same focus.
Do you have moments on the bench with those guys where they're like giving you the gears about not getting them the puck or something, where you feel pressure to keep up with like absolute Hall of Fame guys, or are you comfortable enough in your own style now with how you feel?
Yeah, I mean, early on it is tough. It's not easy to play with those guys. I mean, they're doing their own thing. They're really special players. They see the ice better than pretty much anyone in the game. And like you said, a future Hall of Famer. So at times you just need to keep it simple and get the puck into their hands. And I mean, there was times early on where Nicky would look at me and just be like, put it on my tape. Like, what are you doing? you learn and you put pressure on yourself, but that's part of the game. And that's part of the gig. And I think that's what you want. You want that responsibility, and you try and kind of thrive under the pressure in this job. So it's been fun. Those guys are like best buddies now, so they give me a little bit more room if I screw up a play nowadays than maybe my first couple of games with them. They were like, what's this kid doing? So it's been good.
You mentioned dropping the gloves when you think you may need it, but that whole thing's really changed, Willie, over the last few years. And if I go back to my era, Bob Probert was the measuring stick, man. He was the guy that if you ever went with him, or if you held your own against him, everybody loved it and their stock rose. But, I look in 2021, you are the Bob Probert. You are the measuring stick. So is it hard on some nights if you got some kid, challenging or making a name for himself? Do you have to sit there and go, no, I don't think so, kid, because you can't take on everybody, right? The good news is maybe there isn't that many guys anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's a hell of a comparison to Probert. I think he was one of the best that ever did it, as far as that goes. But it's, there's times in a game where you're, how can I help? What's the best way to help my team here? Is the best way that, I'm playing well, I'm feeling good, and I want to be on the ice hitting guys and scoring goals and making plays? Or, is the game kind of dull right now and this young guy wants to go and maybe you can? But there's so much less of it now. Everyone kind of wants to play hockey first. There was games when I came in, nine, ten seasons ago where you just knew it was going to be a tough one. You knew there was going to be two or three fights. You don't really go into games with that mentality or that mindset anymore. Everyone wants to play hockey. There's not a ton of physicality. There are different teams that play that way, but everyone wants to play offense first and win. And the fighting and that stuff's kind of taken a bit of a backseat. So, you kind of just have to go with the flow and address it as it comes. But it's down a ton, and there's a lot less of that challenging and stuff going on.
So, with less of that stuff going on, you obviously have found yourself playing that top line, playing very well. And then in conversation to represent Canada at the Olympics, like we're talking about the best hockey players on earth here. What were your thoughts on your chances with Canada, the Olympics getting canceled, how close that all came?
Yeah, that was really too bad. I mean, just being part of the process was another, dream come true. Those are I mean, when you're a kid growing up, it's the Stanley Cup and it's the gold medal at the Olympics are the two things that you're dreaming about on the backyard rink and stuff. So just to be mentioned throughout that process was pretty special. And I was really excited just to see how it all went down and see what would happen and see the team going over there and seeing the best on best hockey. So that was a huge bummer when that happened. I don't think it was, fair. I think guys want to compete and show, you know, the game on one of the biggest stages in the world. So it was pretty cool to be a part of the process. Obviously, being mentioned with some of the best players in the world, I don't think we'll ever know how close I was. I know I had a chance, but like I said, that's probably the toughest team in any sport in the world to make, Team Canada hockey. So it was cool, and I was excited either way to watch those guys go compete. I guess we'll have to wait a little bit to see that.
Come on, you didn't get a sniff at all from anybody that you were there or you had a real good chance? Come on.
I guess we'll leave it as I was in the running. I heard from my agent a little bit. There was a couple spots left up for grabs. I think quite a few of them were per se locks. But there were maybe four guys left that were really going for the last couple spots. And I guess we'll never know. But it just to be on those meetings, just to talk to those personnel, I think Hockey Canada, I mean, I was so privileged as a young guy to come up playing for those teams because it teaches you so much. Like, they demand 100%, you know, every day from each guy and each coach, each piece of management, scouting. It's a pretty cool organization when you get a chance to be a part of that type of thing.
Willie, we got to ask you before we let you go, the Ovi watch versus Gretzky. You have to be feeling it already. He's roughly, 150 goals out? But it's hard not to think about it. As a teammate, as a line mate, I mean, do you ever find yourself already being in a scenario going, man, if this guy's open, I got to get him the puck?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of always in the back of everyone's head just because it's such a cool, you know, special journey that he's on. First of all, he's like, you know, the most fun guy to be around at the rink. He loves every second of coming in, being around the boys. I think he's found even more of an appreciation for it later in his career, and he's playing so well. So it's pretty fun to ride shotgun and see that firsthand. And yeah, if there's an empty netter, you're thinking a little bit, you know, try and get it over to him or whatever. And, you know, we've had a good time playing together. You know, you make the play that's open, and he's got good looks, and he's passing it over to me for empty net backdoor tap-ins too. So he goes out there, he's a machine. He just gets hungrier and hungrier, and it's something that I've never seen anything like it, just how much he pushes himself to just keep scoring goals. And such a good teammate and such a fun guy, and definitely keeps a little bit of the old school around the room, and it's fun to be a part of.
Is there a chance that it could be tiresome at time or the weight of it on? Because like I'm already finding myself going, he's gone four games without a goal here. What's wrong here?
Yeah, I mean, he scores at such a rate when, you know, it's like you said, it's like a couple of games and everyone's like, oh no, you know, but he just won't be denied. You know, my whole time in my career with him, sharing the ice with him, there's been the haters and the critics and all these people just being like, you know what, he's old, he's bad, you know, this and that, and he can't win a cup. Then he wins the cup and it's like, oh, he's not going to catch Gretzky. And now he's like, oh, everyone's like, oh, maybe he will. And he just pushes himself and he really just wants to be the best every single game, every year. He just wants to be the best, and he's proven that he is. And anything that his teammates around him can do to compliment him, I think we're all trying to buy in. And he's really also taken on a new perspective for, you know, helping his team win. You know, like I said earlier, there's times where he's passing the puck, he's blocking shots, and it's been a lot of fun to watch the last, you know, 5-6 years where he's taken his game.
Do you babysit for his kid at all yet? Or
his kid is like the cutest, like the biggest stud ever. He's, I'm telling you got to watch out for Sergei Ovechkin. He's a stud. He's already, you know, snapping pucks around the family room and coming out on the ice, helping me with my game. And he's great. They got another little boy as well, so it's been fun to see him become a dad and just how much pride and joy he takes in that as well.
That's awesome. I feel like life must be so different now. You know, first off, Ovi's older and Osha's older and all, Backstrom, those guys getting older. Like, are you guys still able to get out and have fun the COVID year? Like, is it just a totally different lifestyle than it was off the ice for you a few years ago?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's still an amazing job. It's an amazing life. But the last 2 years have been tough. You're kind of just at the hotel eating in the same room every night, and they kind of discourage guys from going out and hanging out together and all the stuff that's so great about being part of a team. But we find ways to have fun and, coming into the rink every day. But you're never going to hear me complain about playing in the NHL, no matter what's going on in the world. They treat us so well. So many guys behind the scenes through COVID that get absolutely no recognition, trying to keep us safe. And there's a lot of people trying to say, what's the best, protocol and all this right now. But the people behind the scenes that are working for us and just everything that goes into it, you got to be thankful for that part of it as well. So we find ways to have our beers and stay safe and have a good time, especially in our locker room. There's so many great guys, like you mentioned, Osh, Ovi. Those guys are two of the best that I've ever done it as far as glue guys in the room. So it's a fun group, and hopefully we'll be in the clear here pretty soon.
Well, we're thankful for your time, Tom Wilson. Really appreciate it. Congratulations on so far a great career that hopefully can turn into another Stanley Cup for you real soon here. But a treat for us on Real Kipper and Bourne having you on the show, pal.
Yeah, sorry it took so long, but happy to jump on and chat with you guys. You guys are two of the best, so appreciate everything always, and we'll chat soon.
Tom Wilson, everyone. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Two of the best. I think he's talking to Sammy and JB.
Well,
how did that feel?
What a great use of time there that was. I mean, I feel like we learned a lot about him, and man, what an interesting guy, huh?
I'd mentioned the 600 games and one of the younger ones to do it with the Washington Capitals. Out of the 2012 draft, there's just one other guy that beat him to 600 games. You know who that is?
Oh, man, I should, but I don't.
Blue and white?
Oh. 2012 draft, or is that Naz? Who would have been that year? No, he's way older than
Riley?
That.
Morgan.
Riley? Morgan.
Okay. Yeah. Morgan. So that gives you a little bit of thoughts to staying healthy and just that level of competitiveness, game in, game out. Morgan Riley right up there with Tom Wilson. You know, he is a pretty soft-spoken guy.
I was going to say.
And pretty a respectful kind of, even talking about Panarin and just the process of the older guys in front of him. Like, Ovechkin signs the 5-year deal, guys, and, we expect him to be around pretty much for all those years, but this guy could easily be the next captain of the Washington Capitals.
Well, what he reminds me of is like a 1980s hockey player. I think of my dad's teams, the Islanders, with Clark Gillies and obviously Nystrom and Trotche and some of the soft-spoken, thoughtful guys who will also tear your heart out on the rink. I think finding that balance is a really impressive thing. There's 32 general managers out there who would love to have a player like that as much as fans on other teams hate him.
Well, I remember the discussion about that contract and it was signed. What is it, $25 million contract just over that or $31 million contract, 6 years. And I remember the conversation at the time was, oh my God, people made fun of that contract. People dunked on that contract. And I remember being like, are you guys crazy? This guy does something that every single team in the NHL, and his contract now at 5.1, that's a steal. For what he brings to your team, like in terms of not only his scoring ability, the intangibles, the toughness, the ability to make everybody on the New York Rangers get fired. Like, he's just the total package.
What's he worth right now as a UFA? What's he worth?
Probably, I would say, in the 8 range, no? Kipper?
Yeah, he's
32
unique.
32 guys want him.
No comparable boys. Man yeah. on an island.
Yeah.
And that's Sergei Ovechkin is training him after his practice sessions.
Amazing. I love it. I don't think Sammy's far off on 7.5-8 million. And it's funny, I mentioned wanting to see him play in the Olympics, much like I wanted Lindros before he played in the NHL. And, of course, it was 1991, that Canada Cup that I was speaking of. But, you know, UFA, he doesn't see it. Kadri will see it out of Colorado. Where do you, you know, just as a comparable or style of play, and of course Kadri doesn't come close to being as big and heavy as Tom Wilson, but Kadri's got a little bit of a unique look and scored the winning goal again last night, and now we're sitting there going, what do you think Kadri's worth UFA? Because he's got a bit of a unique look to his game and the edginess that he brings.
Yeah, so two things can be true. One is that I can absolutely love Kadri, the player. I think he's awesome. He's having a great year. And two is that I'd be terrified to sign him to a long-term deal. Because he's going to be worth so much money. And what is he, 29, 30 years old? This season is a complete statistical outlier from the rest of his career. Like, he's going to score 90 points this year, and you're going to go, oh, I'm going to get 60 the rest of this, aren't I?
He's at 130-point pace right now, fellas.
It's unbelievable what's going on with that guy.
130?
I don't know. Maybe we're just seeing him put it all together because he did have a touch in junior. We saw his ability to score some pretty nice goals as a Toronto Maple Leaf. Maybe it's just coming together for him. I don't see any reason why he can't play like this for another 3 or 4 years, guys. Yeah. I really don't. And well, the points, he may not hit 100 points. Yeah. But, JB, wouldn't you still pay $7 million a year if he can get you 60 to 80 points a year?
Yes, in a heartbeat. Oh, yeah. But what are you going to have to give him for term? You know, he's 31 years old. I just had to look that up. He's 31. So if you're Kadri, you're getting the longest term you can get on this next deal. That is your sole priority. Give me 6, give me 7 years. If I can get him for 4 or 5, I'll give him 7.
Could you give him 7-2 or 7-3 for 3 or 4 years?
Love that contract. I would do that in a second. Would do that. But if you're Kadri, that takes you to 34. If you start to decline, you're all of a sudden you're making 750 grand at 35. If it doesn't work for you, so I think he's got to go for a term on the next deal.
Go ahead, Sammy.
I was just going to say the type of guy I could see ending up in Detroit.
A ton I want to get into. We got George McPhee after the break, which is great, but I also want to get into thoughts on Bob Clark. He ended up going on the Cam and Strick podcast and talked really candidly about Ron Hextall and what went wrong there. And definitely want to dissect that because did it come at the worst time for Pittsburgh? Because everything's going fine for them. They're one of the best teams. We talk about the Oilers being one of the worst teams in the league since December 1st. We're talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins being one of the best teams in the league. And tonight we expect Malkin to be back in the lineup against Anaheim, which is great news. But I certainly wonder how this is going to affect Ron Hextall or even the organization per se, because I think it caught a lot of people off guard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, fascinating to have that conversation. We'll chat about that after the break.
Yeah, I think so. And we'll get to George McPhee to help us tee up Vegas and the Leafs tonight. Stick around. It's a real Kipper and Bourne show. Plenty more to get to. We're back. Waiting momentarily for George McPhee, president of the hockey operations for Vegas Golden Knights, and a team that, JB, when it's all said and done, we expect them to be right there in the thick of things, do we not?
Yeah, it's crazy how many years in a row now when you talk about legitimate Stanley Cup contenders that Vegas is among those teams named, right? It's, they're one of the handful of teams I think you think have a chance every year, deep all the way through, and, they play their unique style of hockey. So, yeah, they're in the mix once again.
Oh, and the big names right out of the get-go. Just seemed like, although he's not there anymore, the fact that they were able to land Marc-Andre Fleury to get this thing started out of the gate. And in so many ways, they haven't really looked back.
Mm-hmm. No, well, that's one of the things that I want to ask him about is like, you know, when a big name comes up, do you ever go, ah, ridiculous? Like, you can't even think about that. Or is it like every time someone's on the market, it seems like Vegas is like, yeah, we could figure it out, couldn't we? Right? You know, we can make a win. We can fit this in.
When we got to that point of Jack Eichel, you know, no looking back, Buffalo, no going back, and you started hearing that Vegas was in the mix, you're like, nah, they can't do that.
No, it's 100% the reaction every time. It was the same with Pietrangelo, where you're like, sure, it makes sense, but it just can't work because of the dollars. Like, Vegas has felt like they have an unlimited salary cap somehow. They're obviously doing a very good job supplementing around these guys that they continually find ways to make it happen.
Jack Eichel back on the ice with Vegas. That should lead probably to what we think might be a starting date for him as early as February. Does he get it in before or after the All-Star break? We're waiting on George McPhee. Hopefully he can give us those type of answers. Mike Kelly, of course, we had at the beginning of the show when he said, when this guy's going, no question, a top 10 game breaker.
Yeah, and what's been frustrating, I think, is seeing him on the Buffalo Sabres where the team just hasn't been great. And so you don't know how he would look if there was greatness around him. And obviously that opportunity is now. Do you want me to read what Eichel had to say today, or should we save that?
Yeah.
Okay, so Eichel had his on his disc replacement surgery. This is from John Vogel of Buffalo. He said, I was sitting here and I was pinching myself a few times during the rehab process, just being like, I went all through all of that for this? It's pretty straightforward. I had surgery. I went out to dinner with my parents that night. It was a lot more straightforward than I expected. To be completely honest, it was a really smooth process. I do have a lot of people to credit for that, but everything went very well, knock on wood. I'm in a great place now, and I'm very happy that I stood up for what I believed in. At the end of the day, it all kind of panned out the way I hoped it would.
And who was the second player to follow up? Was it Chicago's Tyler Johnson, if I'm not mistaken?
He got the disc replacement as well? Yeah,
that does. I do believe so. And nowhere near the attention or the media around that.
No, everyone's like, yeah, you're fine.
You got to wonder now, where does this leave others moving forward here?
Well, hopefully in a better place.
Yeah. And just an easier decision on the options you have when you suffer that type of injury.
Yeah, well, you look at what are the follow-up effects of not having to do follow-up surgeries like you did with his other alternative, and the people he had seen done this before, you know, were in sports that were not necessarily chess. You know, I think there was a UFC fighter that had it done. You know, there are people in competitive sports that have had this surgery done. So, you know, hockey, obviously a physical game, and we don't exactly know how it's going to play out. So we'll save the victory lap. But glad it went smooth. Glad he's feeling good. Really excited to see him back in the NHL.
So while we await George McPhee, and hopefully things are still in order for him to join us, but if not, you want to just move on a couple of topics throughout the league, including Pittsburgh and what we expect is Malkin coming back. And when you think about the Pittsburgh Penguins and where they are, and I, for one, did not see this again coming in terms of their competitiveness, but you look no further than saying, they've had the best player of our generation in Sidney Crosby. Why should we be so surprised?
Well, you know, the Crosby thing is huge, and I'm not ever going to take away from that. He's the guy that it's all built around and built on. But, like, you got to give this team credit for finding some people. You know, Jake Guentzel is leading their team in points. He almost has 20 goals. Evan Rodriguez is about a point per game guy. The Leafs got him back for Kapanen, and then the trade didn't even want him. I mean, you know, a guy like that had a huge part in it. Guys like Brian Rust being so good, Teddy Bluger's been good. Like, they've done a really good job at surrounding their talent with valuable players. So throwing Malkin back into that mix now for a team that's won, what, 10 straight or 10 of 11, whatever it is, Yeah, they lost last game, but they had won 10 straight before that. Like, there's no reason to think that Pittsburgh's not as good as anyone in the Metro Division.
And when we think about great coaches, and so much was made out of... we got George McPhee. Okay, we'll pick up that thought after the break, but we welcome now George McPhee, president of hockey operations and for the Golden Knights. George, first of all, thanks for joining us. I know it's game day and you're looking forward to the Toronto Maple Leafs, but just thought it'd be a great opportunity to catch up with you and just find out where your team's at. We know that it was a pretty strong finish to the 2021 season, a little slow out of the gate so far in 22, but overall, your thoughts, is it hard to read, George, when you factor in COVID, the injuries, and you know, schedule shuffling? Can you get a read on your team as well as you'd like?
Not as well as we'd like, Nick. We are, I think there are three teams, Washington, Pittsburgh, Vegas, I think have done a really good job of earning points despite all kinds of injuries. And we have really been banged up. It started in training camp, and it just hasn't stopped. I think we're number two in man games lost, and certainly number one in man games lost when the cap, the value of the cap hit is calculated. So it's been difficult for us. We've been we've just been down 6, 7, 8, 9, and on one occasion 10 players for almost every game this season. The one time we seemed to be getting healthy was when we went on the 4-game trip to Boston and then through New York with the Devils, Rangers, and Islanders. And I mentioned to Kelly before the trip, I think we're only down 2 or 3 guys at that point. Said, I got a good feeling about this trip. I think we might be able to do it. And we won 4 games. But I haven't had that feeling at all the rest of the season. It's been a really difficult one for us. And I don't think in all the years I've been in the front office, I've been through a season like this.
Well, then, pretty remarkable to be where you guys are at right now, 47 points first in the Pacific, and even by points percentage. You must be happy with how it's gone so far, given what you've had to deal with then.
Yeah, we are. It's been a challenge. We don't know from one day to the next what our lineup is going to look like. A lot of teams are going through that. Obviously with COVID, but we've been beyond COVID. I think we've had 14 players now with COVID, but it's been spread out. Might have been better off if it was all at once. But it's the injuries for us on top of the COVID that has been really hard to manage. And we've got the fingers crossed, hoping we can come out of this at some point. We just haven't so far. Again, it started in camp and it's been going on for 38 games. So we'll see what the future holds, but it's been tough so far.
George, I think I speak for all hockey fans that we're excited to see Jack Eichel play. There's no question he's special and yeah, one of those guys that can bring every hockey fan to the edge of their seat. So we believe that he's joined your team. Did he practice today? How far off is he? What kind of updates can you give us on Jack Eichel?
Well, he was on the ice today, Nick, and it was an optional skate. We had about 10 players out there, but I haven't talked to him, but I'm sure he loved being out there with some pros and had a good practice, took lots of shots, and then had a good skate afterwards. The timeline is unknown, other than it's anywhere, you know, we're at 2 months today post-surgery, and we know that he's going to be able to come back between 3 and 5 months. I think he feels fantastic. It couldn't have gone any better than it has so far. But the next part will be probably the hardest in terms of, you know, when is he ready for contact and that sort of thing. We don't have a specific date in mind, and that's probably a good thing so as to not put any pressure on him. As you know, when you're playing and you've had an injury, you sort of set a date when you think you can come back. and then you get to that date and you're not quite ready, but you feel like you got to play it anyway, and it creates a problem. So we don't have a pressure point there, and whatever he's ready, and we'll get him in there.
We're all disappointed that there's no Olympics, but when you talk about the pressure point, there's one that's kind of alleviated maybe his rush to get back in. Is it maybe a blessing in disguise in the big picture of things?
In what respect? Sorry?
Well, I think you wanted to play in the Olympics.
Oh yeah. I think he's been very realistic, and I know Kelly had a real good conversation with him last night, and was very impressed with how grounded he is and what his expectations are. So I think he's in a really good place mentally and physically, and again, there's no rush to do anything. It's when he's ready, he's ready, and we'll move forward then.
George, there's this thing, I think, among hockey fans when we see a big name come up and Vegas, you know, circulated as a name that could be interested in the player, and we all go, well, they can't do it. That's not possible. Do you guys find yourself laughing at yourselves when you're talking about trying to fit in Pietrangelo or Eichel or these things that seem impossible before finding a way to get it done, or is it always just sort of a realistic, practical conversation?
Yeah, I think we've been pragmatic about it, realistic. And it's you know, it's not been easy by any stretch. You know, we've tried to be different as an expansion team. We've tried to win right away. We tried to move away from that traditional model where you get beat up for 6 years and then see where you are. But sometimes you can lose a fan base or never really create one in that time. So we wanted to give Las Vegas a chance, this market a chance. It's turned out to be just a fantastic market and a terrific place for the players to play, and we get great support here. And you know, we've continued to be aggressive in acquiring you know, talent if we think it's going to make us better. And it hasn't been easy saying so long to some of the players that we've had to move out. And you know, if it wasn't for COVID and what it's done to the salary cap, we may have been able to keep some of those players. But it's we've managed to add real good players, and we think our team, this is our best team. Hopefully we get to see it injury-free one of these days. But we've been aggressive in this approach, and I think we'll continue to be for as long as we're here.
We assume that there would have been a lot more teams involved in a Jack Eichel sweepstakes if it wasn't for a $10 million salary and how it could fit in. So I ask you this, when you're ready to put him in, how big of an issue is it to maneuver your salary cap to get him in? Is it a bigger issue than you might think?
Well, you don't know until you get there, Nick. It's you know, if he was healthy today, he could go right in. And we you know, it probably at any point this season, because we've had so many injuries that there's lots of, you know, there's space. And so we'll see where we are whenever he's ready. And if we have injuries, that's one thing. If we don't, then we'll have to make a few decisions that we've already sort of mapped out. And we'll see where it goes. But again, we've been aggressive so far, and we'll continue to be, and we'll figure it out when we get there.
George, is there any one thing or any players on your team in particular that you feel don't get enough credit for contributing to helping you guys get to the top of the Pacific Division? Obviously, a lot of valuable pieces and bigger names, but is there something that the general public is missing that makes you guys so effective?
Well, I think that that if we're healthy, we've got four real good lines, a real good defense, and good goaltending. And, you know, we've been challenged with that this year, and we've had guys that have been able to step up, whether it's Carrier or Nick Waugh or Nick Haig or Ben Hutton, just people stepping up higher into the lineup, Kolesar, you name it, they've done a pretty good job. We've had some kids come up like Lecision and Ronberg and Merrill Manoff. They've done a good job. And it just, it makes those players better and makes your whole organization better for having sort of expedited some of that development or played guys higher in the lineup. So I think the way the team has been constructed and the depth that we have has been a big help this year. Again, I've just got the fingers crossed hoping that we can be a real healthy team pretty soon.
Boy, George, one of those names, too, is Chandler Stephenson. And while we really like him a lot, it's part of the reason why we thought maybe at times, you know, between William Karlsson and Stephenson in the top six, it's not enough. You got Jack Eichel now. That changes everything down the middle of the ice, doesn't it?
It does. And you're right about Chandler. He has been terrific this year. He's leading our team in scoring. He's been able to do it without Stone and Pacioretty most nights. Has become, he plays on the power play. He's on the PK. He's, really good 5-on-5. He's good in overtime. It's been really good for him. We sort of eased him in initially, and then when you get to this year, you're sort of really relying on him with all the injuries to really step up, and he did, and it's been terrific for his confidence. I'd like to think that, if we get healthy and, our four centers are Stephenson and Karlsson and Eichel and Nick Waugh, that's a pretty darn good center ice. And, we've got Nolan Patrick that can play there. We've got Howden that can play there. It's nice to have a good defense and good goaltending and then be strong down the middle. So it'd be nice to see it one of these days.
George, you're a classic hockey guy and you're a tough guy when you played. How have you embraced the Vegasizing of hockey there, the bright gold helmets and the production and the show? Have you come to embrace it, or does it still feel a little off or different to you?
It doesn't bother me at all. In fact, I like it. the gold helmets, some people like them, some people don't. But you know what? Kids love them. And the kids in this marketplace love them. It's like kids, when they first saw the shootout, loved it. And they see different things in the game. So they've come to love what happens in Vegas. We've put a lot of money into the entertainment part of our show. On the ice, because it's Vegas, and they expect a lot out here. There's all kinds of other entertainment. When you come to a game, there's lots going on in the arena, and hopefully we'll give you a good game of hockey as well. So I didn't know what to expect when we first came here, but what this has turned into has been terrific. It's really been a fun experience for all of us. It's a great place to live, as I've said before, and it's a great place to play hockey. The weather here is fabulous. It's cold in the morning, cold at night, and about 60, 65 degrees, and sunny every day. Good schools, good parks and restaurants, and we live in Summerlin. It's a community of about 100,000, and it's Vegas feels like a small place. I'm all for what has transpired here and pushed for those gold helmets and some other things, white gloves and so on. So we've tried to be a little bit different in most of the things that we've done, and it's gone pretty well so far.
Well, your ability to land big names in Vegas certainly is one of the biggest reasons why we're intrigued. So I'll end this interview, George, on a nice soft question for you. You guys interested in Evander Kane?
Sounds like there's a lot going on there. Nick, I think you know me well enough. I can't show my hand, and it's not the way we've operated. But you know, people have us in on everything, which is fine. But I'm just going to have to respectfully duck that one, Nick.
Well, we got Ken Holland laying out his cards.
I thought we were playing softball.
Knuckle curve at the end.
Yeah, Ken Holland certainly laid out some cards today. But no question, it's a big story. And Vegas being Vegas, man, we expect you guys in on everything to improve the club. And you've done that, George, in a very short period of time. So thanks for joining us, George. We really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Justin. Take care, guys.
Thanks, George.
Oh, I had him backpedaling a little bit there. I think they're in. I think they're in the conversation. Again, yeah. If you think you can fit this guy in at $1 million a year for the rest of the year, how does a team like Vegas not take a look at it?
Oh, shoot. I forgot to tell George McPhee. I just said I hated his team earlier in the show. Too bad. I was going to do that, too. I missed my chance.
I really think that you did that on purpose.
Man, I got to tell you, he's an intimidating guy. But no, that is that was a great question at the end, and I think a fair one. I don't think it was unfair to ask that.
Well, I mean, he's a UFA. It's
sure.
It's got to be a fair question. I'm not asking him as to tamper on property of the San Jose Sharks, so throw it out there. But like, this is where he's got to now manipulate the cap a little bit, and as he just told us, something that he's going to have to see where they are when Eichel's ready to come back. I assume that probably he's going to have to get rid of a $5 million player.
Ooh.
And I would think it would be a Riley or a Marchessault. Now, can you keep him for this run?
Well, you know, is someone going to be hurt or enough players to be hurt to get them past, you know, deadline? So these guys can come back all Kucherov'd up.
Could you trade Riley Smith and his $5 million cap hit and slide in Evander Kane's at $1 million?
I mean, now we're that's replicating how you get Evander Kane's and putting them on all these teams. But yeah, you're
that's
right.
That's how you get out of cap trouble, guys.
You know, the more teams you name, the more I wonder if Evander Kane's going to take $1 million.
Yeah. There's a lot of teams that make sense for
Well, it doesn't make sense past $1 million for a lot of teams. And
right.
The one thing that his agent had said is he wants to go and try to win a Stanley Cup now. So that's every team that's pressed against the cap. So it has to be $1 million or $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. And again, that probably doesn't make all the creditors happy who Evander owes money to, but it could get him closer to a Stanley Cup. Can't have your cake and eat it too here.
Yeah. No, I mean, that there is appeal there. I get it. I get why teams are interested. So imagine if he wins the Stanley Cup. When do you think they would hand him the Stanley Cup? Second? Probably not second, huh? Whoever signs him?
Listen, let's just get him in the room and make sure that nobody's throwing his clothes in the shower.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I think there's only really two types of teams that you could do it, right? The desperation side with the Oilers, perhaps, a team that's really desperate, or the strong room perspective, right? That's what you always hear, is maybe a room that's got a strong leadership group that can handle him, and he knows kind of where he slots in the room. And I think there's only two different types of things that you know, two different sort of situations that he could go into that would turn out, I guess, well. But yeah, I don't know. Which side of that do you fall on?
You know what expression I like about players like Kane is that you can have them in the room, but you can't have two. You know, you can't have a couple of guys that sort of unite and form sort of a dissident clique. But if you feel like you don't have anyone like that, I think you're probably still in a pretty good position to add someone like that.
I got to think that if we're talking about five or six teams that are thinking about Evander Kane, I don't know too many leadership groups that would be adamant that we can win without him. We don't need him. Like, that's a ballsy statement from a leader to go up to a general manager and just, you know, say we're good enough. I don't know. I can't necessarily see it. I think they'd go the other way. We believe our room's strong enough that if he's an issue, we'll address it. And if we don't feel like we can address it, we'll come to you and you get rid of him for us. That's it. It's easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's you're right. I guess the only way you say you don't want him is if you're a guy who's on left wing on the first two lines and you go, I don't know. I don't see a fit. So otherwise, it makes sense.
So we want to.
And then
talk
you get knocked out in the first round and you got to go back and do your exit meeting and go, yeah, we could probably use some help on the left side.
Well, what about, so, okay, we want to talk about this Bobby Clark thing, but should we do guesses on where he ends up? Because there's potential we come on the air tomorrow and he's signed, isn't there?
Yeah.
I don't see how this, if it's as hot and heavy as we believe it is, this thing could turn around in 24 or 48 hours. Correct.
Oh, hold on. I can't even believe we're having this conversation, and we're not having the conversation about, can you put Evander Kane in Vegas? He has a gambling thing.
No, I don't think the Vegas is one that, despite what McPhee said there, I think he wanted to say, have you seen the picture of him with the money in the hotel room? I don't think so.
But, I don't know. I just I get what you're saying, and it's there. Absolutely,
it's certainly an element that you would have to consider.
But I also see a team very desperate to try to win a Stanley Cup here too. So,
So what's your guesses?
Well, listen. How do you not lean towards Ken Holland today in the Edmonton Oilers? You know, is there someone lying low in the weeds right now?
Colorado? Yeah? Possible? You know, I just based on what I know, Edmonton sounds like it makes the most sense. Toronto does make the most sense, but I think Kyle Dubas is going to have an issue with it being Kane. So, yeah, you know, tough to figure out exactly. You got a guess, Sammy?
Well,
I got a dark horse that I've thought that, you know, I'm going back to looking around my strong room argument. What about Pittsburgh?
Yeah, what would Brian Burke say? I bet.
No, Sid. What would Sid say?
Yeah. GM
that's
Sid?
Not. That's all Sid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But boy, he would add to them very well, I feel like. I feel like that could be an on-ice fit very, very good.
How about Carolina? Rod Brind'Amour. There's a coach that could.
I just said you can't have two, and you're putting him with Tony D, the other guy we did this about earlier.
Yeah, it's true.
Tony D's on his best behavior. Best
Tony
behavior.
Tony D's a star.
Okay. I haven't heard from him other than him going bar down all the time.
I know. I'm going to look up his stats.
I go the opposite, JB. I go, we're good at this.
Yeah.
If I'm Carolina.
God, isn't there an NFL team that did this? Just went and got all the guys with the Patriots did it forever, right? They would just grab the guys with issues and make it work with their strong culture and sort these guys out. They'd have their best flair, best years. Yeah, Tony D'Angelo, 24 points in 26 games on the back end for Carolina this year.
What's his cap hit? What's
$1 million?
Is it one even? Yeah.
God, everybody's giving away their services for free now, eh?
Yeah.
Not you, Kiffer. What are you charging sports
now? No, it's $1 million. He's making a $1 million this year.
Wow.
$1 million deal. 26 years old, prime year, point per game demon.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
But listen,
that's what people are looking for.
But he's also making
Vander
money from the Rangers, too, because he got bought out, right?
Oh, yeah. I guess, yeah. So, but, like, he's still, you know, this money. Is no one ever accused him of being not good at hockey. That was never a thing, so.
All right, so we talked a little bit about Bob Clark on comments on Ron Hextall. You wanna read them, Sammy, or JB? Do you have them?
Yeah, go ahead, JB.
Pull them up in a moment here. They're in our group chat. Sorry, they're in the lineup. All right. Thought I had them, and then I lied to everyone.
Get the Jeopardy music.
Don't have them. Don't have them.
Okay, here, I'm pulling them up right now.
All right,
here
buddy,
we go.
Thanks.
Here we go. Coming down in
this is
3, 2, 1. Here we go. This is
Cam's
here. This is from
podcast.
Oh, I got it. Okay. I got it here. Go ahead. All right. Hextall. Hextall alienated everybody right away, Clark said. He shut his door. He locked the doors. He was the boss, and nobody else was a part of it. We ended up getting the second pick in the draft, and we ended up picking Nolan Patrick. None of our scouts wanted Nolan Patrick. I don't know where Patrick should have gone, but after his performances in Brandon, he's a pretty good player. But they certainly wanted Makar. Of course he went next, and now he's a superstar, and Patrick hasn't played. But Hextall made the choice himself, and there were other choices that were made in our drafts that we were paying for. We have two or three first-round picks that are never going to play, and that's why we're struggling. Hexy made some huge mistakes.
Ooh.
Wow.
Ah. Singeing, scorching stuff right there. That's the most direct assault on a current GM.
Yeah.
I
don't see it
Kipper,
that way.
It's ruthless.
That.
No, I think it's a harsh look at, but I don't get venom from Bob Clark on that. I just get a guy that who's giving his opinion. And at 72 years of age, there's no beating around the bush for Bob Clark. I just think honestly, he gives one of the most candid looks, but I don't get the venom. I don't think he's malicious on him. I think he's just speaking what he thinks were the issues, and it's harsh. It really is harsh, but I'm not sure it's a horrible thing.
Well, I don't think it's like illegal to point out that a guy made moves you didn't like. I just think it's, I think it's, he claims to be a friend of the guy. To me, that's a pretty direct affront on a guy's professional career. You know, there's another line in here where Clark also questioned Hextall's decision to trade Braden Schenn for Yuri Laterra in a conditional first. He says, Clark says, that was just as bad. I sat at a table three seats away from him when he traded Schenn. Didn't have a clue. As in, like, you know, he really accused Hextall of going at it on his own here. And to me, pinning a lot
Which
of the failures
did, though.
Of the Flyers...
That was a big issue in Philadelphia,
yeah.
JB,
okay.
Was in the past, whether or not they made good decisions or bad decisions, there was a lot more people included. It was more of a feel of a team management. The point that Bob Clark is making is that Ron really took the ball and tried to run with it himself. And it was... There was a level of frustration in that organization that I had heard about long before he left, and that was that he didn't want input out of anybody. It literally would shut the door. It would be a closed door, and it was his team, his decision, with no impact. And that just drove everybody else absolutely nuts. And they were good friends, and I grew up in that organization, and I spent time with all of them, and I know them pretty well. And when I had started hearing that Ron Hextall really went solo, that's when things got really bad in Philadelphia. And I think that's the only point that he wants to make is he made those decisions on his own. He didn't want anybody's input, and they turned out horrible. And that's a big reason why we've struggled. That's what I'm getting out of this.
Well... Everything you're saying makes sense to me, and I do believe that he's making a fair point. Like, I'm sure that's how it went with Hextall, and you know, having heard that is not, like, the most surprising thing about way things unfolded. I just, like, you know, if our show crashes and burns, I don't want to hear you on a show next year going, ah, Bohr never had the text up to read, and he said he hated the team of the guest that was on. You know, like, I expect you bury some secrets of the things that frustrated you as teammates.
But are
so for him to
are
say...
Are those things true? Did you do that? Did you... Did you do
those
things?
So you know? These are two different conversations. Should you say it, and did it happen? Because I believe that happened. It just feels crummy to come out and burn the guy.
Yeah, I know. But like I said, he's 72 years old, and he's pissed, and he's sour that the team's where it is. And what was once, I'm sure, a great friendship. And Ron Hextall, publicly, you ask him about Bob Clark, his biggest mentor. I can't believe right now what this is doing to Ron Hextall, because he speaks so highly of Bob Clark on where he is in his career and the opportunities that he's had. He says number one guy has been Bob Clark. So I can only imagine what this means to him. But, you know, this is a relationship and in many ways an extended part of your family that has gone really, really sour. And you can just sense the frustration for Bob Clark on where the Flyers are today. And unfortunately, he's saying, you know, Ron didn't empower anybody. He just, there's a part of him that just wanted to do this all by himself, and it backfired on him and it backfired on us, unfortunately.
It's such a huge part of having success is finding that balance between being the true, having, you know, being a true leader and showing proper, you know, ability to make the final hard decision, but at the same time, getting the best out of people. And you're right, particularly for a GM, I think a huge part of the job is pulling from all the different departments because you can't be everywhere at once and you need to lean on other people.
Yeah. And Ron's biggest problem in Philadelphia is he didn't trust a lot of people. And that's, I think, what Bob Clark's point is about the scouts is like, Makar. And he's like, and he's single-handedly saying, no, Patrick. And it's like, okay, but you know, this is your call. And if it backfires, it's on you. And I bet you they had that conversation. And here he is years later saying, it's on you. You got to live
with
that.
There is some, I'm sure there's some frustration when the blame doesn't fall to someone who is worthy of it. Like if you were a Bobby Clark and you were a part of this thing that didn't win, and everyone's saying, well, what was with not picking Makar? You know, at some point I get him being frustrated, being like, we wanted Makar. We had the scouts that wanted Makar too. I get him being frustrated. I believe it happened. It just seems a bit much to say in public. I don't know.
Candid. Real candid by Bob Clark. All right. We're out of time already. Is that a couple of hours already?
Bam.
God, they just fly by, boys.
Great guests lately.
Oh, my gosh. Our thanks to Mike Kelly, Tom Wilson from the Washington Capitals, and George McPhee. And wherever you get your podcast, wherever you're listening, give us a rating and review. Let us know how Sammy and JB are doing. I already have a feeling how you think I'm doing. No comment. All right, we're right back at it tomorrow. Quickly, Leafs win or lose, Sammy?
Win.
All right, there it is. We're back tomorrow to recap it all on Real Kipper and Bourne.